We are live. Welcome back to the Hype Train podcast with me, your host, Magnazan. This is episode 2. Today's guest, I have a professional internet troll, as well as longtime hobbyist, Chris Jackson, otherwise known as Jacko Meister. Here we're going to be talking about a couple of things today. First one being, we're going to throw a bit of bro science in. We're going to be doing a bit of aerodynamics and frame designs, what works, what we think doesn't work. And we're also going to be talking about motors as well, and the motor technology and what makes a good motor versus a bad motor, some magnets, you know, all that kind of good stuff. So without further ado, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks for coming on the show. Just for those that don't know you, and there's a lot of people that do know you, particularly on the Road Across forum, because you pretty much post pictures of me every other post. Just explain to the listeners who you are, what you've been doing in the hobby, how long you've been doing it, all that kind of good stuff.
Hi, my name's Chris. I'm an aircraft engineer by trade, been fixing planes for 17, 18 years now. Been in RC, playing with RC planes and helicopters and the works for about the same period of time, maybe 17, 18 years. Now I full-time work on UAVs. That's just a professional name for toy planes. and yeah, it's good fun.
So you troll me a lot. But you know, I try to give it back as much as I can. So you've been flying RC planes for a ton of time. And when did you get into FPV?
Maybe 6 months after it started to become commonish anyway.
So probably about, 2 years ago? Three years ago? Yeah. What did you start with?
Actually, my first FPV thing was a T-Rex 450 XL with a 900 megahertz video transmitter I brought off on eBay. And that was like 8-9 years ago.
That's brave. That's brave on a helicopter.
It was crazy. I don't know what I was doing. No one else was doing FPV at all, but I thought, hey, here's a good idea.
Now, because you've got TBS gear as well, right? So you had the 2.4 gig long range
A disc. I don't use it much anymore, if at all. It's 5.8 where it's at. It's fine for most things.
Yeah, definitely. I think the technology's come on far enough now that for the most part we don't need super long range, low frequency stuff unless you're going miles and miles.
And all the completely illegal stuff gets developed a hell of a lot better than the lower frequency stuff. Like 1.2 gigahertz gear, it's just rubbish. It's
just All right. So let's get into it. So we're going to talk about aerodynamics in quad frames, which is kind of an ironic thing to talk about given what they're actually designed like at the moment.
Yeah.
So the hype is there's a lot of frames coming out with either molded canopies or completely molded out of carbon, or even 3D printed canopies, or, you know, full body, some are part body. We're also seeing things like stick arms now for the racing quads. So let's talk about the building materials first, because that's probably the easiest one to get out of the way. From the get-go, we've had quads. Well, the first bunch of quads that we saw were pretty much plastic of some sort.
Plastic or G10?
Yeah. So, yeah, I remember my first racing quad was an MXP 230 G10.
Yeah.
With 6mm arms, and that thing was an absolute beast.
You were hype training all over the G10 back in the days,
man. Oh, dude, I love G10. The amount of people that we used to see on the forums, oh no, I've just blown up my ESCs, I don't know what's going on, because they're putting the ESCs on the carbon because they didn't realize it was conductive. And they're like, oh, I've blown up 3 ESCs, I don't know what's going on, help me. It's like, well, what frame have you got? Oh, it's carbon frame. Have you got anything underneath the ESCs? Have you got any shrink wrap? No, just on the frame. It's conductive.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other thing as well people don't realize is that the carbon is a RF shield as well.
Yep.
So if you lay your antenna flat against a piece of carbon, it's only going to be unidirectional outwards from that piece of carbon.
Yep.
So I saw a post from Bapu about the ProSite where he's laid the antennas flat on top of the frame and at the side. I mean, he's getting good range from it, but I can't imagine it's good generally.
Probably because it's doing digital and it can sort of make up for it.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to be working, but, you know, in a typical RF 2.4 gig on your radio antenna or even video, it's, don't do it. But G10 isn't an RF shield. That's why I used to love it, as well as not zapping everything.
Yeah, but it's heavy and it's weak.
Yes, yeah, and that's the reason for 6mm arms. Although I never broke a 6mm arm, I always used to break the bolts.
You never crash though, do you? I've never seen
I crash, but... Yeah, but that thing would just take out all sorts, take out trees, cars, whatever, gates. Gates, you should just run through gates, no problem. But unfortunately, back then, we didn't have unbreakable props as well. But anyway, we digress slightly. So then we, from plastic and G10, it's gone to carbon fiber pretty much solely now. You'd be very hard-pressed to get anything that isn't carbon. I've seen a few kind of composite plastics around, but mainly carbon. Now, just explain to the people why having carbon sheets and constructing it in the way that we use them on mini quads is good or bad.
It's bad. There is a better word than bad, but it's not the correct way to use carbon. Carbon is stiff in one direction, and it's really crappy in the other direction. So it's really good in compression, and it's pretty good in extension as well and shear. But carbon's designed to take a load in one direction, and so that's why they're all made of bidirectional prefreg carbon that's pre-cured into sheets and then cut up. And it looks pretty, and it's good enough, but there's so much better ways of using carbon.
Yeah, I know that Alex Hewson down in Christchurch, when he was really into his quads, Alex is able to mold carbon or lay up carbon from sheet, fibers, whatever it is.
Using tow, crap loads of carbon tow. A tow and is a bunch of carbon fibers in a bunch, essentially. It's called a tow. And carbon sheet is made of tows that are woven together.
Sweet. And he was laying these up in a mold,
yeah,
and creating a kind of a single plate, kind of a unibody, really. And it was only about 3mm, but this thing, it was so strong and so rigid, you couldn't bend it. It wouldn't even flex, and you could pretty much just chop trees down with it. It was just absolutely unbreakable.
Indestructible.
Yeah, like if you got an equivalent piece of carbon sheet, you know, 3mm, 4mm even, and compared it to what he was making, you could bend the 4mm no problem, but there was absolutely no way you could bend this thing. It was ridiculously strong. And then he started making a kind of a carbon top plate for it as well, so that would cover, because he originally 3D printed the top plate to cover the electronics. But I believe that Sean Dynamo has one of the only fully molded Panda cords. Mm-hmm. And it looks cool.
The full one with the top molded. I have to see him.
Yeah, he's been running it for quite a while. He really rates it. It's indestructible, and it looks cool as hell as well. Mm. So do you think we're going to see more carbon molded frames? That there's a guy now called dexmodels.com who's doing a number of molded frames, and they look absolutely awesome from a strength point of view and an aerodynamic point of view. What would you say about molded, particularly those ones, and I guess anything else that might come out versus the sheets that we've got at the moment?
It depends how well they're done, to be honest. It's carbon. You have to know what you're doing. You have to know where the stresses are going, and you have to put toes in the right direction to actually like absorb the stresses and distribute them around the frame. If people know what they're doing, like Alex knows what he's doing, It can be awesome. If they don't, you just end up with an expensive thing, because molding carbon is expensive. It's just the nature of the business. It's there's a lot of work that goes into making molds, and then getting a nice product out of a mold is a whole different thing again.
Yeah, and you got to, I guess, for this hobby as well, you've got to make it look cool.
Yeah, exactly. It has to look cool. Otherwise, the hype train won't take it on
board. No, it's never going to pick it up. No, you're absolutely right. from an aerodynamic point of view, is there really any way that we can make, or is there, okay, let me restart that. Is there any real, is there any way of making a quad at the moment, a standard quad, aerodynamic enough, or is it going to require a complete redesign or something completely radical?
So using your standard 3mm
using carbon, yeah, using right? Yeah, using my standard sheeting without doing molding, because I suspect that a molded frame would potentially be more aerodynamic.
Oh, you could do whatever you wanted with it. Yeah, you definitely could.
Yeah.
Hadley's thing, the BQX, the BQX, the BQXR, that was my take on it, and the new one, I forgot the name of it, the little one.
Yeah.
Those are the best ones I've seen that are just straight carbon plate cut up, because you don't have a big flat arm sitting right below your prop.
Yeah. And
collect
the prop. I'll put this in the show notes, a link to his frame. But Hadley is just a mad scientist when it comes to mini quads. He has got the most outrageous designs for mini quads that I've ever seen. Basically, they are, rather than having flat plates for arms, he's got two plates, but they're side on, so that there's nothing in between the prop and underneath, other than this, 2mm piece of carbon? Yeah. 3mm. So there's two plates, and they're stacked with a hole in the middle. So they're stacked sideways, and they've got these mad angles on them with reverse rotating props, so that you get extreme yaw control and just absolutely ridiculous speeds out of the thing, because it's just there's nothing blocking the air going across it. For a frame that's just out and out speed, it was outrageous.
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, just add a normal sheet carbon design, it's outrageous. Is there any way that you can get, because you know we're seeing a lot of frames now that are coming out with stick arms, which is going towards that design. So they're coming out with, I think, 4 and 5mm arms again out of carbon.
Yep.
And they're making them super, super skinny. Obviously, you're not going to really want to run the ESCs on the arms with these. So you're going to want to run the 4-in-1 ESCs, for example, or somehow get the ESCs inside the body so that you don't have this big square blob on the arms. Is that going to make a massive difference, do you think? Or
yeah, I think it will, because you're suddenly not losing. Like, most mini quad arms are, 30mm thick, maybe? 30mm wide, I should say. And, that section of the prop is just totally dead air. As soon as you do that, it's just killed. So your 5-inch prop is now the equivalent of a 4-inch prop, where if you get rid of all that surface right below your prop, you suddenly got a whole bunch more active area of your prop.
Well, that's an interesting point. So where you see these thrust tests and putting out 1,000 grams of thrust or whatever on a thrust stand, that's great in one indication of how much thrust a motor and a prop is putting out.
Yes, if you can hover the shit out of it, it's awesome.
Yeah, but as soon as you put that on the arm of your mini quad, you're losing what, 20%,
probably
30%. Yeah, that's quite interesting.
Work it out with some geometry.
Yeah, no, we're all about bro science here. We're all about bro science. We'll just estimate it.
Sorry.
Yeah, 23%. That's a good number. We'll go with that. I was looking over earlier of some links on aerodynamics for mini quads, and there's not a lot out there because for the most part, I think they run on magic and voodoo
and hype.
Oh, yeah, 99% hype these things run on. But there was an interesting article that I came across on the droneinsider.org, and I'll put this in the show notes, where they talk about drag coefficient and lift coefficient. So do you want to just explain what those are and what the differences are?
Yeah. Your drag coefficient is the amount of drag that, in this instance, a mini quad sees in relation, well, proportional, it's a exponential curve, in relation to the airspeed. So the faster you go, the more drag it is, but it's not a direct relationship. So twice as fast takes eight times the amount of drag, essentially.
Okay.
Lift coefficient is a similar thing, but there's a bit more involved in it.
And it's not really relevant to mini quads, is
it? Yeah, the mini quad lift coefficient is going to be rubbish anyway. You've got four props just destroying any lift that any frame is going to have.
Yeah. So this article basically talks about the two. It mostly says, in summary, there's pretty much zero lift coefficient in any of the frames, but there's a big difference in drag coefficient between frames. And what it does is it compares a bunch of kind of standard setups. For one thing, it compares an Alien frame to a Shrike in terms of drag or the aerodynamic coefficients of the two frames. And the Shrike is massively better through the air than the Alien frame, which is what you'd expect, because essentially the Alien frame, we're talking about the normal 5-inch Alien here, is just essentially just a big brick.
It's a bad design. The hype train picked up on that design. It's just bad.
Hey, mate, it's X. It's all about the X.
Oh, right? Sorry, it was an X. Yeah, well, awesome then.
But I mean, the thing was a standard frame. Okay, so all they've done there is taken an H frame, which was the standard, and just put an X on it.
I want to see a standard H frame with motor dimensions that are exactly the same compared to your Alien, because the surface area in the Alien is greater because you've got more arm in the way.
Yeah, I think it's more about where the motors are than anything else.
Yeah.
We could talk about XL. Well, maybe we should do. Maybe we'll talk about XL versus H versus X.
It's your podcast. You can talk about whatever you want.
This is true. Maybe we'll save that for another episode. one of the interesting things that comes, it also talks about is having a GoPro on the front, which is quite interesting, because I would have thought that having a GoPro on the front versus no GoPro would dramatically increase the drag.
Yeah.
But it actually doesn't, and I suspect that's because of the angle you're flying at. It's not actually that much bigger or wider than the frame.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's still on the frame.
But it depends on the frame to a large degree. Like, for instance, Hadley's machine, which the frame sits quite a bit flatter because it's got the 25-degree tilts on it. The GoPro probably make a significantly larger difference.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so just going back to Hadley's frame, just so people can get a visual for it. When it's flying flat, so if you would hover a normal quad, that's how this thing flies pretty much, because it's got 25-degree tilts on it. Now, these tilts are not only forward, but they're inwards as well. So you don't get the traditional weird yaw issues that you get when you used to have tilts on a normal mini quad. So this pretty much flies almost flat at full chat. So having a GoPro on the top of there would be adding a windbreak, effectively.
A speed break is what we call it in the industry, mate.
Speed break. That's the technical term, is it?
Technical term, yeah. That's
awesome. All right. So do you think we could? So some of the other frames that are coming out, let's talk about the Shen drones, and I know Quad Junkie, we've got the pod on the fix as well. And also there's things like the Kraken. And I think Shen drones have also done a polycarbonate full body cover as well. No, this is I think it goes on either the Orca or the Mako. I'm not sure which one, but it's a full body polycarb.
That kid's got a lot of frames, hasn't he? Old Shen drones. Mm. I remember he was just making stuff out of bamboo.
Well, I mean, he made a bamboo quad, didn't he?
Yeah, that's what he started making. He started making bamboo quads.
So is that a good material to make things out of?
Yeah, it's great. Bamboo's awesome material. It's really strong. And it's the exact opposite of carbon, really, because bamboo strength is all in one direction because all the grains are in one direction. Whereas carbon plate is bidirectional, so it's got strength and cross diagonals depending on how they've laid it on the machine when they cut it out.
Right, okay. So it's not ideal then?
It depends if you use it. Well, it's awesome material.
Could you mold with it?
Nah, No, it was to put up a tree, mate.
You know, just turn it into sawdust and mold it up with a bit of resin.
Custom wood.
Yeah, so I thought it was quite interesting. So do you think that there's any benefit to running full fuses on a standard quad, or do you think it's still going to have to radically change?
On a standard H quad with a big body, yeah, probably.
To the point where you'd notice it, though?
Yeah, I think so. I think you would. On stuff like the Krieger and the Shrike and stuff like that, where there's actually a really small body, I don't know if you'd see any difference.
That would be my guess as well. Interesting. All right. Well, I think that's probably enough on bodies and enough bro science there. Let's throw some more bro science at another topic.
What about prop guards, Matt? We haven't talked about prop guards and how they slow you down.
Yeah. Well, they only slow you down on your Phantom, I guess.
I don't know.
So let's talk about motors, because motors is the other passionate thing you like to talk about.
No, I'm passionate about idiots who talk about motors.
Well, there's a lot of that. I mean, I for one am one of those people that will talk about all sorts of things with no comprehension or no backing. But that's why you're here, correct me.
To troll.
To troll and correct me.
Exactly.
And I thank you for that.
Someone's got it.
So let's talk motors. There's a ton of options. There's obviously, you know, there's different sizes. We've got 22. We all started off on, 1806? No, actually, I tell you what, I started off on a 1704, 1900 kV.
How did you see them? That's you know that.
You know, I've got them in the drawer, and I occasionally see them when I open the drawer, and they are so small. They're like the size of your thumb, like the thumb tip. And at the time, I remember saying to Kim, I said, I don't think I'll ever need more than these. that was on 5030s. Oh, I thought they were so fast. But then I went flying with my first bunch of guys that when I got into mini quads, my first race, and one of the guys had a set of 2204 2300 Sunny Skies.
Amazing horsepower.
absolutely crushed me, like just destroyed me, and I was like, OMG, that's so fast. Oh, I've got to get me a set of those.
Yeah.
And that's when Cobras had just come out, you know, the 224 2300s.
Yeah, I remember that.
I put those on and it's just absolutely ripping. But so we've got 224s. So we started off on typically the motor size were 1806s, you know, 2300s, thereabouts. Then the Cobras came out and they were 2204 1960s and the 2300s. And a lot of people started running the 1960s on 4S with Bulmo's props. And then people realized, hang on a minute, we can actually run the 2300s on Bulmo's props as well, with slightly bigger ESCs, because at the time everyone was running 12-amp ESCs. Now we've got just a ton of choice. We've got, I've seen 2306s, 2206s, 2207s, 2208s. But now the standard seems to be the 2205 to the 2206 sort of size, depending on what you go. Let's talk about KV. How do you change the KV in a motor? Because obviously the motors are all the same for the most part.
I reckon we talk about size first.
All right, let's talk about size.
What does the 1806 and 2204 and stuff mean?
It's the stator size, isn't it?
The stator size.
There we go.
You got a gold star.
Yeah. Choo-choo.
A 2204, for instance, is 22mm wide stator, and it's 4mm thick.
Okay. However, we know that Cobras weren't.
Because they were lying. The dirty bastards.
Terrible, terrible Cobra. Anyway, okay, so the stator size is the magnet size, right?
No, stator size is the stator size.
All right.
The stator sits in the middle. It's covered in the windings that are all wrapped up. Stators are made of a bunch of laminations of silicon steel for the most part.
Okay.
The stator sits in the middle, got wrapped in windings, and it creates the magnetic force that the magnets react to.
So what's the benefit of a bigger motor?
The main benefit. Power.
Okay, so we can take more power.
You can put more power into it and get more power out.
Okay, cool. So very simply. KV. So that's
KV is the number of RPM it'll do per volt of input power.
Sweet.
With no load. That no load bit's the big bit. It's nothing on. There's no prop. It's not making any thrust. It's just unloaded.
Okay. And that's important to note, isn't it? Because as soon as you put props on there, that whole thing changes. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Bigger the prop, the more it slows down, until the point where it's just not working.
So how do you change the KV in a motor?
You can either drop the number of magnets in the motor.
Okay.
You can reduce the power of the magnets in the motor, so less magnetic force, you get a higher KV.
Interesting, okay.
You can drop the number of turns on the stator, so lower turn motors have a higher KV. And there's four different terminations as well, like a Y and delta termination is what changes it all up, but that's way too heavy for a podcast, man.
Yeah. But of any of those methods, is any one better than the other?
No, it's more of a cumulative thing of designing the motor to be awesome from the start, so it's everything together.
So you could in theory just weaken the magnets and have the same power as something that's wound less.
That's what happens when most motors burn up, is the magnets overheat, the KV drops. Yeah. Motor tries to spin faster, chews more current, gets hotter, magnets drop even more, magnet just keeps getting hotter and hotter and hotter, and eventually all the insulation on the windings burns up and it shorts out and smoke.
So that's an interesting point for the listeners, where if you've had a motor that's been cooked that doesn't have the high temp magnets in it, which typically a lot of motors, or older motors at least, don't have the high temp magnets in them. If you have cooked it, either you've cooked it from an ESC, if fire even, or you've just run it too hot with too much KD, for example, or a D term, then it is, and you've flown afterwards, and it's still getting hot. When you've reduced everything off and all the others aren't, then you might have done permanent damage to that motor. So, and increase the KV.
If you're getting it, if you're running a prop that's so big or a voltage so high, putting so much load on the motor, that it's making so much heat that it's upsetting your fancy pants magnets and your fancy pants motor, run a smaller prop. You'll get more RPM. You'll make more power. It might be chewing heaps of power, but you're actually not putting that much more power out because it's all going to heat.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. So propping, let's not get into that just yet, actually. Let's just continue on around this magnet discussion first. So the high-temp magnets that we're seeing, so there's different grades of magnet, right?
Yeah, they're all neodymium magnets.
And they're all graded, right? The number grade is from 23 or 25 up to...
It depends what bank would put 52. On
it. Yeah. But the apparently the highest quality is an N52. Yeah. Is that the most powerful, or is it just the best quality?
Oh, it's smoke and mirrors.
Okay. All right. We'll go with it. That's fine. So N52 is, we're seeing those in a lot of motors, or a lot of the newer motors, whereas previously we had N50s, I believe.
Wind you back up there, mate. Newer motors. Okay. You mean the cheaper newer motors. Old motors used to always run these magnets because that's what you used to run in the old days, was high quality gear.
Okay. Right. Not so much probably mini quads though.
No, well, mini quads didn't exist.
Yeah.
Back in the days. The horse drawn cart, the potato in our belt, mate. It's the way we roll.
All right, so
right, N50, back on topic.
All right, back on topic. N50s, the typical kind of budget motors that you're going to see. So N50s, they aren't high temp, so they've got a maximum temperature rating of 100 degrees. I want to say 100 degrees, possibly.
That's good.
N52s, I think I want to say 150. Or maybe 120, 130, maybe a bit higher. And then N52SH, which is apparently what the ZMX run, if you believe it, which are, I checked one website and it said 150, but they reckon at 200. So, add the hype factor on, let's call it 200 for now.
200, 220.
200 degrees.
Which is if just stupid.
If your motor is making 200 degrees.
You should be cooking chicken with that thing, not flying it.
Yeah, you should be whipping out some interpiss on that if it's 200 degrees. Or you should, I'd be worried. Although, to be fair, if it's on fire, it's probably going to get up there. I don't know whether it gets to 200, but it might be getting pretty close. And at which point, if it goes over that 200, if it is ready for 200, but let's just say if it does go over the 200, then you're likely to still be able to use that motor at the kV it was rated at.
Yeah, it shouldn't lose magnetism and will force the...
Okay, cool.
There's a K-factor thing, I can't remember what it's called.
But there are other issues if you've cooked it, right? So there's what, resin on the... Oh, there's a coating on the winding?
Yeah, all the windings have an insulative coating on it. It's the coppery brownie looking straw coloured stuff that's I think it's actually phenolic resin that they slap all these wires on in a big machine as it comes out of copper wire, and it stops them all shorting to each other. So it's not just a big lump of copper, it's a bunch of windings that are insulated from each other.
And if you cook that?
If you burn that off, your motor's dead.
Right. It's just not going to work.
Because it's suddenly a big shorted lump.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So if you have set it on fire, it's probably unlikely to go anyway.
Yeah.
And if you're reaching 200 degrees, then that stuff's probably going to burn off as well.
You're doing it wrong.
Or doing it right. Depends how fast you're going, right?
How much smoke you're making.
Just quickly, I remember back from my 3D heli days with the motors that we used to run there.
Yeah.
There used to be talk of motors that had thicker windings versus thin wired windings.
Yep.
The thicker wired motors were supposedly be able to put out more torque, whereas the thinner ones weren't for the same kV and the same spec and everything else.
That could be a delta versus Y termination thing.
No, these were the same. These were the same. It was always, I just remember that the Compass heli motors had big, thick wires in them, whereas you compared it to something like a Scorpion motor, a lot thinner.
When you're winding motors, the goal of winding the ultimate brushless motor is to get as much copper as you possibly can between all the stator teeth. So a stator teeth, it looks like a whole bunch of T's. If you've got your motor, right, you got your stator that looks like a round thing, and you took all the windings off it, it looks like a whole bunch of T's arranged in a circle. And each one of those is a tooth that gets wire wrapped around it. The ideal thing is to get the most amount of copper you could possibly get in there, and the best way to do it is with thick copper. So, but the production costs of winding thick copper in these holes and jamming as much copper in there is a lot harder, and there's a lot more manual labor involved as opposed to doing it with lots of thin wire.
Okay, so that's pretty much why we're going to see thin wire in mini quads for a while.
Yeah, until someone decides to make really awesome motors.
Does it make too much difference whether the windings are tidy or not, or does that not really matter?
To some degree, you might see some variance in kV depending on how well the motor's winding. Like if you've got these little Mexican children sitting there getting fed, whatever they're getting fed.
How dare you? It's Chinese children these days.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
So if you miss a turn on one of these teeth as you're going around, suddenly your kV changes. And so to get them, you might have one motor that spins slightly faster than the others and such like that. But in the case of a mini quad, your flight control is going to make the difference up.
Right, okay. All right, yeah. That makes sense. Okay. Is there any so the wires that come up, obviously when we're wiring up these mini quads, there's set gauges of wire that we use for the amount of amps we're going to be pulling.
Yep.
Is there anything that we need? Is there any benefit to running thicker wires on the motor side versus
not really, because your motor is essentially an AC current.
Yeah. Yeah.
So each one's going on and off in a big circular pattern. The actual constant current through there is actually reasonably low because it's like the RMS thing going on.
Okay.
So, yeah. Not really. I wouldn't worry about it too much unless you're putting 1,000 amps into one.
And with regards to length of wires, it's always better to have longer wires on the motor side than the ESC side.
It's better to have shorter wires all around. Longer on the ESC side is the better to go.
On the ESC side?
On the motor side to the ESC.
Yeah. To avoid voltage ripple, right?
Yep, because he's got caps sitting in your ESC, which smooth it all out.
Cool. All right. So really, in theory then, anything that's high temp magnet's going to be good for if you cook it.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you're cooking it, you're doing it wrong.
No, I realize that, but you know, people make mistakes, and if you can not have a motor that's going to die if you accidentally have too much determ, or you know, set some fire, maybe you might be able to recover it. Because I've had a motor on a bench that I've just done the timing on and spun it up, and it's just had an absolute spaz and white smoke comes out of it.
A lot of that's to do with the mini quad motors are being horrendously overloaded. It's become the norm to massively overload them.
Yes.
So you've got these tiny little motors that are running at like 60% efficiency because we're just trying to put such a big prop on them. And there's going to be a point where someone goes, hey, we should probably put bigger motors on this.
Yeah, but then you've got weight issues.
Yeah, and then the weight issues comes up, and then you'll suddenly get bigger motors and people start overpropping them again.
Oh, yeah, totally. And that's this is the thing that we – oh, so actually that's a good thing you bring up there. So one of the things that we saw in – sorry to bring this back to helis again, but one of the things we saw in the heli scene was the jump to higher voltages for power systems. And what that meant was that you could run – on the same heli, you pretty much let's take a 450 size, or you know, the near 360 size. It jumped from 3S to 6S.
Yep.
However, the kV of the motor dropped to compensate for that, so that you weren't running ridiculous RPMs on the head.
So your head speed remains exactly the same, yeah.
Correct. Well, it was a little bit higher, but it remained within the same ballpark. So that it meant for the duration of the flight, you would get more consistent flight performance, because obviously the more volts you have, the less amps you run, and if it, you know, on the whole powertrain, it was just a lot easier on the whole system. For mini quads, we're seeing this jump to 5S, 6S.
Yeah, 6S. 5S is a flawed battery.
Explain. 5S.
Go to 6S, but go to 6S and drop the kV, so you don't. So it makes sense. Not like
So this is the thing. So I know Steve FPV is running, and obviously a bunch of people are running 5S at the moment.
Yep.
However, he's running 5S on the same 2206 2600 kV motors.
Oh, what are you doing, mate? What are you doing?
It's quick.
Look at yourself.
It's quick, but he's only still getting a minute 30 out of it.
Yeah, because half of his power is going into warming the atmosphere.
Yeah, totally. But the problem is that I see two issues with going to 6S. One is people want to run bigger batteries, or you know, more cells, so that we go faster. And in doing that, we're going to be running the same motors with the same KVs, which means we need bigger batteries. So therefore, the weight issue comes back in. So we're not actually gaining that much.
Why don't you get bigger motors? Deal with all this extra power so you can get...
Well, there is that, but then we've got more weight, so then we lose agility.
Well, you want to put a bigger battery in anyway.
But the thing is...
Just go around circles, mate.
I guess it depends what you want out of the power, right?
Yep.
If you're going to do acro, you could probably get away with a slightly heavier machine with 6S. But let's be honest, on an acro machine, you're at full throttle for, well, couple of seconds, and then you just chop the throttle and do some flips and rolls, and then you get back on the throttle again. You're not putting a constant load through the system.
Yep.
Whereas a race machine, you're at above 50% throttle for 80% of a race for the most part.
Yep.
That's where I see that efficiency coming in, because we can really work a system on a race machine to the absolute point where the battery's sagging, motors are getting hot, ESCs are getting hot, just the whole system starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if we were running 6-cell on the same equivalent RPM but lower KV motors.
Yep. You get some efficiency gains, and like you say, you wouldn't have the same sort of power drop throughout the flight because you're using less.
So you'd actually probably gain more speed. But you're gonna have to run sort of the 800 milliamp 6S pack.
Yeah.
And keep it the same sort of weight as well. That's the other challenge. Any sort of weight addition is going to really hinder the performance.
And it's, for given watt hours, higher voltage is actually heavier, or watt hours being the voltage and capacity. So it's a constant between low voltage and high voltage and high current and low current.
If you put more electrons in it, it's going to get heavier.
Well, no, because with your higher cell counts, you've got a whole bunch of extra wires and you've got extra...
Yes.
Each of these cells is extra crap to go with it. With a low voltage cell, you don't have that same amount of crap. So for the given watt hours, a low voltage pack is actually better.
So if we combined the two topics here and we were to make the ultimate machine, what would your body look like on the machine? What would the frame look like? What would the motors look like? And what would the power system be?
I still think there's a lot to be done.
Let's go for racing.
Racing?
Yeah, let's talk about a race machine first.
For racing, I think it's a tricky question. Low drag, obviously.
Yeah.
I like Hadley's machine. There's something to be said about there, but if you're going fully molded, you wouldn't have to go that route. You could do something else clever.
Mm.
Probably looked at high voltage or something like that. Six cells if the rules allowed six cell.
Yeah.
And if you can keep it lighter, you could get away with running bigger motors. So you actually get more power out for your power in. Which is, if you're getting 20% more power out for your power in, that's a massive advantage.
But yeah, I mean, the thing is that I think as long as you can get the same flight time or similar flight time for the same amount of performance, I think that would be worth doing, because there's a lot of tracks still that you can't use full power on all the time, right? So if you look at that MotoGP track finals that they just had, that was an absolutely epic track.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt you were not 100% throttle all around that track, or even I wouldn't say that they were really 80% throttle for more than 70% of the track either.
Yeah, true.
At a guess. So if you can get the similar sort of performance out of a six-cell setup, running obviously lower KV, and keeping it the same sort of weight, you're going to have that extra – you're not going to be worried about that pack sagging – yeah, halfway through the race, towards the end of the race, you're always going to have that constant performance. So I think that's going to give you the slight edge.
Possibly, but if you're only running at half throttle anyway, you're not really going to notice your sag, because you've still got half the throttle to use.
Yeah, true. But I guess.
Is that their brain deciding that you don't have half the throttle use?
Well, and this is the problem with all these things, right? Is that you can make the quad faster. And you can make it more aerodynamic, but is it going to give you any extra anything on the track?
And if the track is tight and turning, and all you want is acceleration, keeping it light has a lot to say for it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think probably keeping it light is the way to go.
Yep, light, slippery. You want it all, essentially.
Yes, but I think keeping it light is probably higher on the priority list than... having more power.
So fully molded and light, strong, better, faster, stronger.
Yeah, there we go.
Do it. More bamboo.
More molded bamboo.
Yeah.
Hashtag pro tip. That's the new hype, people. Molded bamboo. Keep a lookout for that. All right. So I think we've covered just about everything. And I don't think, is there anything else you want to say? I think we're,
I can't really say much, mate. I'd do a meme right now if I had a meme.
I'm sure you'll be memeing the post when I put this episode up. So keep a lookout for that. Anyway, thanks for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure as always.
Hey, likewise, mate. Likewise.
And I may get you on again. Maybe we'll talk about props next time and how you think that anything to do with an airplane translates directly to a mini quad.
Yeah. Totally, because it's the same thing.
Exactly the same thing. Inside joke. Anyway, thanks for listening. This will be check out the show notes for everything we've talked about. The podcast is on Stitcher, and we're also on iTunes. Make sure you like and subscribe. Also check out my Facebook channel, Facebook page even, not channel. Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/springdesign. You'll find all the episodes there. Anyone's got any comments or suggestions, please let me know. more
horse
memes.
Pictures. I want some more horse pictures, Yongzi.
All right, more horse pictures for Yongzi. But if anyone's got any ideas, any tips, anything they want us to discuss, just let me know. And thanks again for listening.